This episode is sponsored in part by OmniSend. Do you sell stuff online? Then you need OmniSend. Yes, that OmniSend. The powerful, yet refreshingly intuitive email and SMS tool that helps you make $73 for every dollar spent. That one's so good, it's almost boring. Like watching steady lines go up in charts and up and up? Just automate your email and SMS campaigns with OmniSend. Set it up once, then sit back and watch the sales roll in while you snooze. Oh, you're still awake? Then give OmniSend a try and start getting sales so steady, they'll definitely put you to sleep. OmniSend, your.omnisend.com/unofficial Shopify podcast. Today, we're going to hear from someone who has quite the history building brands and making quite a lot of money doing it. He's built a $100 million brand. You've listened to the show enough times, you've heard of Chubbies, and has also built the number one returns management app, Loop Returns, and is now moving on to yet another even harder project, building an ERP with Good Day Software. We are joined by Kyle Hansey, who is going to walk us through this incredible journey, both as a Shopify merchant, now a Shopify partner. Kyle, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you? Thanks for having me, Kurt. Appreciate it.
Thank you for using my name. I should have introduced myself. I'm your host, Kurt Elster.
Check nasty.
And of course, this is the unofficial Shopify podcast. It helps if you include an intro in your own show. So Kyle, how did entrepreneurship become your career path? Where does that spirit come from?
I think it was there really early for me, and I knew it was the end point for me. I think, like a lot of people growing up in the U.S., I grew up in the Midwest, just outside of St. Louis. Entrepreneurship always also felt like really elusive and risky, and just kind of outside of the realm of how much risk I would take as a human being growing up. But over the arc of my life, I was continually kind of interested in being able to pave my own path, kind of blow the lids off of any limits to my personal potential, and found myself in my mid-20s saying, hey, I kind of tried the corporate thing for a couple years. I don't think it's for me. I want to kind of drive my own success, and if I get there, great. If I don't, at least I know it's because of me, right? And I was really fortunate in that I met three of my best friends in college. We all kind of had that same feeling in our mid-20s at the same time. And so we found ourselves in San Francisco saying, hey, we should do something different. We should do this together. And that became Chubbies. And so I always tell people I had the easiest entrepreneurial onboarding ever, and that I did it with three of my best friends. And so every moment you had like a little ounce of doubt on like, oh man, this is pretty crazy or this is pretty risky, I had three really talented, hardworking folks saying, hey, no, like this is a great idea. This is a great plan. Let's push through and execute. So I feel very fortunate.
When the alternative to entrepreneurship is work 9 to 5 in a corporate environment for someone else, it sounds like that was the other option here for you. What was unattractive about that? Now you said, yeah, I'm going to take the risk with the entrepreneurship path.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and like, don't get me wrong, I've had the best mentors ever. And all of the folks who are my old bosses continue to be mentors to me today. So I also had it pretty good as far as things go in that world. I think it was more around being an independent thinker, wanting to build. I mean, there's something very real about the moment of creation for any business. The moment of creation for Chubbies was us realizing that in the men's apparel world, the way that these apparel brands talked to their consumers was not very authentic. Certainly wasn't how I showed up or engaged with my friends. And so the genesis of our opportunity there was like, hey, like we have these really unique, dynamic, funny, quirky relationships with each other. Like, what if we built a brand that kind of spoke to its audience like that? And that was really the original genesis of Chubbies. It didn't have much to do with apparel or this, that, or the other. It was more like, hey, we can bring this to life. this would be really fun to work on. Oh, okay. If that's what we're doing, then what are we actually building? And certainly in apparel, we felt like we had an edge and some interesting and unique perspectives.
So once you're at, hey, I found my business bros, and we're going to build an online business, and we determined it's going to be fashion and apparel. What inspires the idea for Chubbies? Chubbies known for selling short shorts for men.
I always tell people this, the genesis really was not like, let's go build a short shorts business. The genesis was, let's go build a brand that matters and is authentic for this audience of guys. And then, we are one of these guys, so we're really building this for ourselves. Let's do so authentically, was the idea. In the early days, we had these ideas around, let's own the weekend, which is still very pervasive in Chubby's brand today and very fun.
It's in the tag of the shirts I own.
Of course.
Ready
of course.
For the weekend.
Yeah. The weekend has arrived.
The weekend has arrived.
Yeah.
My mistake.
So of course it has been fun. I think the really special thing about the experience was we gave each other and our entire teams the liberty to go experiment. When we first started, we had a head to toe look that was very much like a modern young man's version of Tommy Bahama. You can see I'm wearing a golf polo right now that could kind of be put in that lane. And right out of the gates, people were like, hey, these kind of vintage inspired shorts that kind of feel like my dad just gifted me a brand new pair of vintage shorts from the internet are really interesting. Like, there's nothing like this out there. You know, we started to build just a brand, an apparel brand that mattered head to toe. It was very clear from day one. I was like, hey, this whole thing right here, these like shorter shorts are super interesting to us. And that business carried through real quick for a long time. And then, you know, like most entrepreneurs, like you're scaling, you're having a heck of a time. Things are, you're of course experiencing challenges like any entrepreneur does. But then like you got to a place where the scale was real. It required real capital. It required really talented people. It required a lot of planning and a lot of process and a lot of systems and tools that we weren't used to using. We're entrepreneurs. We're learning all this stuff on the fly. But even to this day, I think I look back and one of the most memorable things is just giving each other the ability to try things and learn from them. And that was true in the apparel and the merchandising. That was true in the marketing. We were really edgy in marketing. And we talked a lot internally about the main thing we need to make sure that we are is we're authentic and real to somebody. And we don't mind being polarizing. We're going to be pretty unapologetic about that. We're going to be really authentic to what we're building and why, and why it's interesting to us. And we are welcoming to everybody. We want everybody to join, but if they don't want to, all good. And I think holding that line still today with the Chubbies brand is one of the things I'm most proud of.
So that brand is authentic. We heard that word a lot. Edgy, polarizing, and in some ways experimental. It's also a $100 million brand. What do you think is like the one thing that enabled that? How did it become a $100 million brand? A big difference between I sell, you know, some t-shirts online and I've built the next Tommy Bahama.
I would think about it in phases of growth. And I think all businesses that have been fortunate enough to survive for over a decade kind of go through different phases. If I look at the brand, I would say in the early days, we were very marketing driven. A lot of our edginess and differentiation was in the marketing and how we were selling online and distribution. And elements of that continue to today, for sure. It's definitely a big part of the brand overall. Over time, as we started to see real scale, what became clear is we were going to have to become great operators in apparel, which is a whole different set of needs. Now, we were fortunate enough that my co-founder, Rainer, was ex-Levi's, ex-Gap, came from that world.
That helps.
It is also individually one of the most talented people I've ever met, right? So for us, we had an unfair advantage in the world where we were all trying to teach ourselves how to become great operators in fashion, right? So as we hit kind of logical milestones in the business, you know, I would say somewhere between 20 and 40 million in revenue, we hit real roadblocks that we had to work through operationally that took years to figure out and required resetting and rethinking everything we were doing top to bottom. But the net of it is we became really, really great at building great products that were differentiated and fit within our brand envelope, fit within what the customer thought of as where we should be super differentiated. And so I would say both being really good in the digital sphere and then transitioning that into an entire new skill set of being really great at product. And then now as I look at the brand, I think they're doing really, really cool, big brand initiatives. And we did really interesting brand initiatives in the early days, just not at the scale of what we're doing today. You know, they have huge partnerships with the NFL. We couldn't even have imagined, you know, 5+ years ago. The brand has a foundation and they're giving back hundreds of thousands of dollars to like really, really impactful initiatives. And so there are really big brand things that they're doing today that we couldn't imagine. You know, they're in every single Dick's Sporting Goods across the country and succeeding and thriving in that environment. You know, operationally 6 years ago, we couldn't have handled that. But all of those things just speak to like, man, there's a really big, really big brand out there. And now they're starting to work through how to continue to build it at that scale. And that's like a whole different set of challenges that the team's working on.
What's the bit with like looking back on it, what's the biggest challenge you ran into in scaling where you thought, okay, this is like, we plateaued it. There's been a great run, but like, this is it.
So again, remember we built this like internal culture and framework around not building towards perfection. We were not right 100% of the time. We were experimenting wildly and we were learning from our mistakes and moving quickly always. So I would say some of our biggest lessons were in and around this, like become great merchandisers and apparel operators. And that was, okay, you've had some success in shorter men's shorts. What do you parlay that into from a brand perspective? For us, swimwear was a really logical one. Holy cow, swimwear is already kind of naturally short. It's vibrant and fun, fits really well inside the brand. It immediately became half of our business. This overnight, it hit and it was amazing. You know, then the next logical extension was like, hey, we were kind of like doing a lot of work on the bottoms. Let's make a bunch of shirts. Now, we had not yet received the permission from our customer to go be differentiated. We were not yet great at developing and bringing those products to market. So the V1 of that was just not as successful. And so we learned, we took some lumps there. And then we had, you know, call it another one or two of those. We're like, whew, man, new product categories in some of these directions can be really, really hard. But then you fast forward, and I think a lot of what we've learned is, one, we needed to try it. We needed to learn. We needed to iterate and get better. And so now we've now spent years doing that across all these vectors. But also we needed to widen what the brand meant to a larger audience. And I think as the team kind of continued to hack down all those things, we found opportunities. And you look at the business now today, and it's there's a large piece of it that's fully offline. You know, for the first, you know, 5 or so years, it was all direct digital. And now the team is just so much more, you know, well-rounded and attacking the market in a much more diversified and interesting way for the brand.
I was in Shields in Springfield, Illinois, waiting for my car to charge when, imagine my surprise, they have like a whole section that's devoted to Chubbies. They like everything on display. It was really cool to see. And for a brand that started with shorts and this very like cruise wear look, we'll say,
yep.
My favorite Chubbies item, a 3/4 zip fleece sweatshirt. I got two of them in like the most outrageous highlighter colors. They're so fun.
I love it. Yeah, Shields has been an amazing partner. I think that's like a pretty good example of when you're a young operator in your mid-20s and direct-to-consumer digital brands are just being built. You got to remember when we started Chubbies, this was like 3 years off the heels of this starting to happen in general, right? Bonobos had just been created 3 years prior to us, and like it was really, really early when we started. You know, we looked at these retailers and said, oh, that's a thing of the past. And what we learned over time is like, man, these retailers are really good operators. They're really, really great at building experiences that draw people in and centralize great products in their spaces. And so for us, as we became really great at making differentiated products, these became great places for us to have really big buildouts. I mean, that experience at Scheels for me is one of the best ways to experience our brand. Of course, we're supporting them, but they're really great at that. Really great at that. They support hundreds of brands in that same way. And they were a great early partner, took a lot of risk on our brand. You know, we wouldn't be in some of the other big accounts we're in if they hadn't taken as much risk as they did.
Ever wake up to customers canceling orders? Maybe they said, I shouldn't shop when I'm high. This was a gift. We broke up. Those are all real customer quotes. And they're all a real hassle for your customer and you. Why should the customer have to ask you to edit their order for them? What if they could do it themselves? Enter Cleverific. With Cleverific, you can empower your customers to make their own changes through a self-service portal. Cleverific is designed to reduce customer support tickets, ship orders faster, and even reduce returns and lost packages. Don't just take our word for it. Menswear retailer Peter Manning New York cut their order support queries by 99% with Cleverific, and they're not alone. Exclusively for listeners of the Unofficial Shopify podcast, get 50% off Cleverific's Pro plan, now just $49 a month, giving you full access to everything Cleverific has to offer. Just go to cleverific.com/unofficial and use the promo code KURT50, that's K-R-U-T 50, at checkout to claim your discount. Take control with Cleverific and watch your customer support tickets plummet, shipping speeds increase, and package returns decrease. And all of that means happier customers. You know, I know nothing about how Scheels is run other than, you know, having been a customer. It's like a DTC mall in there. It's kind of fun. Like just walking around, the number of brands where I'm like, oh, that's on Shopify. Oh, I worked on that one. Just walking around Scheels is wild. It like just from the outside looking in, it appears that taking those successful hot DTC brands like Chubbies and then bringing them in store was part of their merchandising strategy intentionally. I'm speculating.
No, I think your instincts are right. Right, this Scheels is an employee owned business based out of Fargo, North Dakota. And as such, all of the people inside of the business have like incredible agency. All of the leaders in the merchandising group, if they believe this is where things are going, they pursue it. And so I do think they're operating at a level that is in many ways different and superior to a lot of the people they compete with. If they're in their local community and they're noticing that all of the, you know, 15 to 25 year old boys are all of a sudden wearing this brand, why wouldn't they be bringing that to their community is the question and how they think about it. So to me, I think it's a really interesting experience. If people haven't been in Scheels, go. It's really, really cool. I love taking my kids there. We go to the one arena all the time. Cool retail experience.
So based on what I know, are you no longer involved with Chubbies?
Yeah, so when we sold in 2021, we sold to a roll-up of D2C, disruptive D2C brands called Solo Brands, which we then took public.
That included Solo Stove, right?
Solo Stove, Oru Kayak, Isle Paddleboards. And so it was kind of an outdoor focus, D2C disruption family of brands. And we were looking to bring in a lot more, a lot of other kind of disruptive and exciting brands. Now, of course, the early part of 2022 hit. Things became pretty challenging pretty fast. You know, I think I'm excited that Chubbies has been able to join that family of operators and really thrive. One of the, you know, in Rainer's done Holy Cow, just such an excellent job of navigating how to build an amazing brand and it's kind of like next phase. But for me, I took a year off. And so as an entrepreneur, I kind of in my mind had said, hey, had this amazing experience with Chubbies. You know, also on the side, you remember we started Loop Returns back in 2016, along with John Poma and the Rocket Code team, also big contributors to the Shopify ecosystem. And, you know, I had a front row seat from the board there of Loop kind of growing up and thriving. You know, spent a year on the sidelines, or what I thought would be a year, got about 4 months into that and was like, whew, this is boring out here. I think I just am a builder. I want to be building a team. I want to be building an exceptional product. I want to be competing and winning every day. And quickly, you know, I found myself on a golf course with Dave Wardell, my now co-founder at Good Day, talking about how we needed to bring disruption to this ERP world, and how hard it was going to be and how excited we were about attacking it. And so I do think I learned a lot about myself in that quiet time, which was just that I don't like it. I want to be in the flow. I want to be in there competing. But it was really valuable time. Here we are building a good day.
I would like to think that were I to win the lottery, that I could just stay home and play PlayStation forever. And the reality is, by day five, I would be bored out of my mind and crawling up the walls. Like, some people are work dogs. They gotta work. And it sounds like that is the case for you. And it's a good thing to feel productive, isn't it? And to be making something.
And I think my slight twist that I learned about myself is just that I grew up in competitive sports. I played college soccer. I just really love competing. Almost the more head-to-head it is, the more I love it. And it's a big part of, as we looked at fully disrupting the ERP in Shopify, it was really nice to say, okay, the market leader's clear. We need to completely unseat them and create a world that's not a little bit better than their world. Create a world that's 10 times better. And that, man, the idea of doing that with every day of my life became something I couldn't get out of my head.
So you've had the experience of building a consumer-facing brand, traditional retail stuff like fashion and apparel with Chubbies, operating on the app side and somewhat on a services side with Loop Returns. And so we've got that app ecosystem and tech side. And now you've got Good Day Software and ERP.
Yep.
What's different about being on the app side of e-commerce tech than the direct-to-consumer side?
Man, we carry so much empathy for these brands into every day. I spent the majority of my career building a brand I love, and every day was a knife fight. Every single day you wake up, you get in there, and there's something new somewhere that's not quite what you thought. And so you have to build this incredibly adaptable, flexible environment with your team that can effectively handle anything that's coming at it. And you should expect every day when you get into work that something's coming. And so what you become really good at after doing that for a long time is planning over long cycles of time, but being ready to go when when things are all of a sudden not what they are. I would say on the software side, I always found myself as a brand operator being really frustrated with software providers, to be honest. And that was because I didn't feel like they were reactive enough or in it enough with us. I actually think Shopify does this best. And it's amazing to me that they do it at the scale they're at today. Man, they are in it with you. And as I talk about opportunities at Good Day, one of our biggest opportunities is just actually being in it with our brands. Actually being in the conversation, talking to them, listening to them. Trusting that, frankly, they know, we have our own set of experiences, N of one, from building Chubbies, but man, we're going to gather a lot of inputs from all these other experiences. The power of that, benefiting everybody in Shopify's ecosystem, is really, really invigorating. So I'm trying to build a culture that's way more responsive to these merchants and in it with the merchants. Now, I will say the fundamental differences of the business models drive some internal behavior. You don't get anywhere near as much ongoing, rapid customer feedback when you're building software. It's much slower. So there's just less to react to. And so as I think about challenges for me as an entrepreneur, I'm getting used to that. I'm trying to create those moments where I get more input from merchants, and we're doing some really smart, cool things there. But man, when you're in the apparel business and you're launching a new product every week, you learn a lot every week. And you can evolve every day. With what we're doing, some of these things, especially in ERP, these are foundational pieces of technology, managing all of your inventory. If there's anything off in our inventory ledger, it's a problem. So that thing takes 6+ months for us to build with no actual outside feedback. And so it is a different feedback cycle and all those sorts of things. But I think at the end of the day, a lot of the things that work for us at Chubby's will be moved into the culture of Good Day. And it will feel a very different than a lot of software companies out there.
So Good Day, this ERP, this is a work in progress.
Yep.
What's the thing that inspired it? Because like ERPs by their nature are fundamentally painful. If you're like, hey, Kurt, you want to go build a torture device? I'd be like, oh, it's an ERP, right? Why do this to yourself, you maniac?
Oh, totally. Sometimes I ask myself the same question. Our experience at Chubby's really shined a light on these sorts of tools for me. And when I was talking earlier about that plateauing, somewhere between kind of 20 and 40, where we needed to become great operators, a part of that equation was we didn't have the right systems, we didn't have the right processes, and we didn't yet have the right people. So we needed to fix that whole stack. For us, we spent 18 months initially and then another 18 months building a lot of software out on top of NetSuite. It cost us about $1 million to build all of this stuff. So I'll tell you two things that come out of that. One, staggering amount of investment that made me very uncomfortable as a small business owner. Secondarily, when COVID hit and we had all these tools in place and we had the right people and processes in place, wow, did we feel the power of these systems and tools. I actually think it was a large part of how we were running laps around our competition from the second COVID hit until, you know, multiple years later. Chubby scaled tremendously during that period of time. We were built and ready for it. What that told me is that, man, these tools can be powerful, but we need to change the way we're bringing them to market. And specifically, we need to change how complex and hard these tools are and make them more accessible to smaller brands. One of my biggest insights is there's this common idea that until you're a 50 or 100 million revenue brand, your business isn't complex enough, you don't need an ERP. Wrong. I'm just telling you, when you're 5 million in sales, you start to bring on complexity. That is brutal. Historically, you haven't been able to afford, and the tools have been too hard to use for traditional ERPs. And so for us, we're starting there. We're building that. We're making it really easy for these 1 to 50 million revenue brands to get these tools in place, get the leverage out of these sorts of tools early in their life cycle with the hope that maybe they don't need to hire so many people down the line, right? Maybe they don't need to change so many of their processes when they get bigger. They just kind of already have the tools in place. Now, the last point I think is really important is without Shopify in this and having built a lot of infrastructure in an ecosystem, I think this would be incredibly hard to accomplish standalone. You just can't convince me that the brands growing up on Shopify, 1 to 50 million in sales, aren't complex enough to need these sorts of tools. I think over the next 2 years, you know, we'll have to prove that out. And I would say, 16 months into building, the early signals are really, really positive.
Well, looking at the Good Day Software website is really nice, but it's clear, just looking at the site, the screenshots, the language, and what you've been saying, this is a Shopify-first ERP, meaning it is from day one, it is fully integrated, it's built as an embedded app, you use it inside the Shopify admin, and then it's also got some good practical features in here, like it out of the box, it just syncs with Google Sheets. Whereas like every other stupid ERP, I got to use Zapier or some other connector to make that work, which seems ridiculous to me, right? Like, we're all using Google Sheets. Just give me my data, please. I recognize a lot of the stores and brand names on here. So this thing, are we in beta? Is this available now? Where are we at with this?
Yeah, it's in beta. I would say we are fortunate enough that we brought in $6 million last summer to build out an extraordinarily strong technology team. And so we're working with about 25 brands who are really close to the fold. And just linking this back to what we were talking about earlier, like we are really in this with these brands. We're talking to each of them every week or two about their operational challenges and the things they need from us to help us inform building out the product itself. And so yeah, it's still in beta. Going into next spring and summer, I think we'll be at a place where we'll go to general availability. And look, the early feedback from folks who are adopted is that, man, Good Day is really owning this moment of, I've built this really exciting brand. I'm looking out in the distance and saying, oh, if I keep going, I'm going to have to sign up for one of these traditional ERPs. But then Good Day is coming in saying, hey, this doesn't need to be this hard. Let's get you out of spreadsheets. We're going to do this in the next 4 weeks. Our entire merchant success team is ex-brand operators. So we know all the data. Send us your raw data files. We'll put all of your data into the system. We'll hand it back to you inside of 4 weeks. And we'll begin to train you on how to use these different elements of the platform. And so I would say early, people were kind of blown away by the simple idea of just having data in a centralized, trusted place instead of across all these manual spreadsheets, across all these different functions of their business. And so simply centralizing and cleansing and making sure the data is correct is like a huge value prop for these companies, because then they can say, oh, hey, we out of the blue, we had a wholesale account come in. Nordstrom wants to sell Chubbies next spring. Do we have enough inventory to do it, right? Yeah, go to Good Day and take a look. You'll see all the inventory we have on hand. You'll see all the inventory that's coming. And so you can make these kind of really hard, complex questions pretty simple, right? You can get the inputs to those questions pretty simple. You know, I also think that when you zoom out and you ask yourself, for these brands that are in this environment now where venture capitalists and others are not coming to invest in their companies, they have to build profitable businesses earlier in their life cycle. One of the areas that's the hardest to get right is your product, your inventory investments, the margins of your product, et cetera. And so we're spending almost all of our time in making that part of the pie much, much more optimized. And to me, that's the biggest part of the pie. We're biting off the biggest piece we could. There's a lot of folks biting off the marketing stack. For us, we're really zeroing in on your inventory investments.
The Unofficial Shopify Podcast is sponsored in part by Zipify. And they've got the ugly truth about direct-to-consumer sales to share with you. And spoiler, it's really ugly. 82% of the people who buy from your store once will never buy from you again. And there's nothing you could do to win them back. That's why you need to get as much revenue as you can from each order. And that's where OneClick Upsell comes in. OneClick Upsell is a Shopify app that offers your customer upsells and cross-sells with every purchase. And it can increase your average order value by 15%. With OneClick Upsell, you can add AI-powered upsell funnels to every product on your store in just 3 clicks, including your product pages, shopping cart, checkout, thank you page, and even on the shop app. So you earn extra revenue automatically. OneClick Upsell is already the number one choice for 15,000 Shopify stores. And guess what? It's made merchants like you an extra $750 million. So don't miss out on another dollar in free upsell revenue. Try OneClick Upsell today and start making 10 to 15% more from every customer today. Go to zipify.com/Kurt to start your 30-day free trial. That's zipify.com/KURT. I'm curious, cautiously optimistic about an ERP that doesn't suck and is Shopify first. There is one thing that is suspiciously absent on here, on this website. It's pricing, right? Like, who is this right for?
Yep. Clearly, it's a work in progress, like a lot of what we're doing. The target for us is that we want to be between 70 and 80% reduction in total cost of ownership relative to traditional ERPs. So it's not an immaterial reduction. That's a design challenge for me as a CEO to our team. We need to build something that's easy enough to implement and powerful enough for these brands that we can take a massive amount of market share in this space. And one of the ways we're going to do this is just by being more friendly to them early. Now, we're going to grow with these brands. We're going to be a big part of their growth story. So my instincts are, just like Shopify 10 years ago, if we can be huge change agents for these brands and help them grow and get there, the brands we're bringing on at 5 to 20 million in revenue today will be 100 5 to 10 years from now. And we have to prove that we can be a part of that story and help these brands get there. If we can't prove that, then yeah, I think that pricing will look hard for us over time.
But we're just not saying we're not giving any indication of the pricing, because like Shopify early on, there's shopify.com/pricing. I'm sure we could go find it was there.
Oh yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to be evasive at all. So for folks who are under 10 million in sales today, we set them up for $1,000 a month. Really simple, no implementation fees, none of that sort of stuff. As you get up to 20 million, it becomes 2,000, and so it's purposefully.
Knowing what other ERPs cost, and you alluded to like, hey, there's also a setup fee. I mean, they're outrageous and time consuming. This is a fraction of that.
And I think you also have to incorporate the sneaky cost that people don't talk about. In a traditional ERP, you have a subscription cost. You have an implementation cost that's sometimes 50 to 100% of the software cost. You have ongoing maintenance costs just to keep it working. And then you have ongoing data connectivity costs. Every time you want to connect a new data source into your data, it's going to cost you another 10 to 15 grand. And so for me, having built out a huge instance on top of NetSuite and rode with it for a long time, we're creating a world where we're in-housing a lot of those extra dollars. The other leg of the stool on our internal design challenge, make sure that our brands don't have to access outside engineers to build anything operationally. Connecting new data sources, our responsibility, right? Implementing, our responsibility. It's very much a Shopify mindset, right? Of course, people do Shopify migrations and there are service providers and we'll figure out those business models. But on day one, we're in-housing all of that stuff and just making it dead simple and very merchant friendly.
In my head, like I'm hoping for Klaviyo for ERPs. And I know investors hate when you go like, it's X for Y. I don't care, right? And I'm hoping for Klaviyo for ERP.
I think that that's an interesting way to think about it. I would think of it more like Shopify 10 years ago relative to Demandware is good day today relative to NetSuite.
Okay. Well, I like it. I hope that this works out because I'm optimistic. You've been doing this so long. I think you've probably been involved in Shopify and e-commerce longer than I have. It's like, what, 15 years you've been at this? How's the industry's changed overall since you started?
All of these brands growing up on Shopify as digital disruptors, digital challengers to incumbent brands are learning that at the end of the day, they're brands. And the channels where they sell and all that stuff are how they operate. But at the end of the day, they're brands. And if they want to have a really special brand, they have to have market share as a brand. And so I do think that the thinking around that has evolved. And again, you got to go put yourself in the mindset of 5 to 7 years ago where digital was like the only thing. This is a world where Chubbies was saying no to any wholesale interest based off of principle alone, right? So I would say in general, that is obviously evolved to me. I think for the good, for the long term also, the brands are really focused on building sustainable, long-term resilient brands. And that started about 2 years ago out of necessity, right? The consumer got tougher and anybody who might invest extra dollars in this world left, right? I think when you zoom out 10 years from now and look back, you're like, wow, all of these brands really got smart. The operators got really smart. They started building profitable businesses that now will be around for a much longer time. And so I think that's really, really good. And then the last one I will say with Shopify is just, man, Shopify's promise 10 years ago continues today. They're bringing an insane amount of value direct to merchants and helping these merchants both create their businesses and then scale their businesses. That's why a part of why we're building so close to them. And then secondarily, Shopify is creating this massive ecosystem of which Good Day is a participant, of which Loop was a participant, of which Chubbies benefits from, right? And I think to imagine a world where Shopify wasn't such a positive contributor to that partner ecosystem seems like impossible to me. Like they've held so true to that for the last 12 years that I am betting a lot of Good Day's future on the fact that that will continue. And they're going to continue to just center the merchant and say, whatever is best for this merchant, getting them from A to B is what we're going to do. And so to me, I think that has really remained the same and has been a continuous kind of powerful force in the marketplace for sure.
I love that. I love it. I certainly we've hitched our carts to the right horse. All right. What's the first thing you do when you wake up, Kyle?
First thing I do when I wake up, I know this is a little bit of a crazy trope, but I do hit the cold plunge. It just sets me up for a great day. It's like out with the morning coffee and with the cold plunge. Just get right into your day. Hardest part of the day is done and move on.
So I don't have a cold plunge, but I do appreciate just jumping into an ice shower. Similar effect. It really,
there you go,
really wakes you up. Heart rate jumps. I love it. And so you said no coffee. No coffee or tea? We don't drink caffeine?
I do, just later in the day now.
Okay. favorite book?
Favorite book? The first one that came to mind is, just because I've been thinking about it a lot lately, is Mark Randolph's book, That Will Never Work. And it connects back to this conversation about entrepreneurship. I've been talking to a lot of young entrepreneurs recently, and my like primary thread of advice is just start building. Really smart, competent people oftentimes don't trust themselves enough. And they get caught up in the process of just starting, and they write business plans and rethink business plans and do all of this work when really they should just start. Build the product. Let your product or service collide with real humans, and then you'll begin the learning process. Mark was a board member for us at Chubby, so we were really fortunate to have him involved. And he taught me that, and I think I take it on myself to try to spread that mission, because I think it's so powerful at a base level. Just start building.
A lot of people, they're looking for the sign. They're looking for permission. Kyle just gave it to you. Please. Please just try. You may not succeed, but you'll learn a lot.
Yeah.
And okay, what's your other than Good Day software? What's your favorite productivity tool?
This might be a little controversial. I just like a pen and paper.
Oh, I love it. I got legal pad and pen right in front of me right now. Always.
As Asana and others were coming into our lives, I don't like how much of a specific lane those sort of tools push you down, and I like a lot of day-to-day flexibility in what I'm doing. And so my like trusty list of three or four things that I'm trying to do in a day are really the things that I try to live by and accomplish. And I will even say, I've recently gone through, I forget the book that I got this from, but I've gone through a process of just writing down one thing, which is kind of an interesting mentality. Today, what you need to accomplish is this. And what's cool about that is it creates a lot of flexibility for the day. But if you get to the end of the day and haven't done just that one thing, then you weren't efficient.
I live and die by lists, but the moment you've got more than three things on the list for the day, like, what are you really going to be doing? And so if you find yourself in that position, take Kyle's advice. Try doing the, like, this is the list has one item and this is the thing. And that can really be powerful in focusing your productivity. One thing you wish you knew before you got into entrepreneurship?
The power of compounding. I wish I had started becoming an entrepreneur when I was like 12 instead of 25. All these experiences compound on themselves so magically. Right? Like, the way I build Good Day is wildly different than the way we built Chubby's in the early days. Right? And I would just have more at bats.
I've always fantasized, it's like, if I had the knowledge I have now 20 years ago, wow. You know, would things be different? But you can't, you know, without a time machine, we can't operate like that. Yeah. But it is, I think it's an important thing to acknowledge that, like, if your instinct is telling you to do something, maybe just do it, as opposed to wondering about it years later. Chubby's was all about the weekend and relaxation. I want to know, what do you do to relax these days?
Oh man, we are fortunate in that we're in Austin, Texas. I have a 7, 5, and 2-year-old, and we are fortunate that we're able to get out on Lake Austin and do tubing and all that sort of stuff for most of the year. So when I'm just like relaxing and taking a long Saturday, that's what we're doing. Otherwise, I'm in the like classic hubbub of a father of three. where it's like a revolving door of soccer practices, lacrosse practices, and dance classes, and all that stuff. But when we're like unplugged, we're either getting out on the water or getting up in the mountains.
That sounds like a lot of fun, and lucky for your kids. Okay, so if I want to check out this ERP and make my life easier, gooddaysoftware.com. If I want to go to learn more about Kyle Hensey, any place I can go?
Yeah, you can follow me on LinkedIn. This is Kyle Hensey. You'll see all my stuff. You can also follow me on Twitter. KHensey6 is my handle. But yeah, if you sign up for a demo of Good Day, you're signing up for a demo with me. I'm going to dive in there and get to learn your business with you and get a sense quickly on whether or not we can actually help you. So I would say if you're interested in Good Day, just sign up online. I'll reach out to you pretty much immediately.
That's cool. Yeah. Kyle Hensey, gooddaysoftware.com, and former CEO of Chubbies and co-founder of Loop Returns. Just an incredible career. Thank you for sharing the journey with me. I appreciate it.
All right. Awesome. Thanks, Kurt.
Crowdfunding campaigns are great. You can add social proof and urgency to your product pre-orders while reducing risk of failure. But with traditional crowdfunding platforms, you're paying high fees and giving away control, all while your campaign is lost in a sea of similar offers. It can be frustrating. That's why we built Crowdfunder, the Shopify app that turns your Shopify product pages into your own independent crowdfunding campaigns. We originally created Crowdfunder for our private clients, and it was so successful, we turned it into an app that anyone can use. Today, merchants using Crowdfunder have raised millions collectively. With Crowdfunder, you'll enjoy real-time tracking, full campaign control, and direct customer engagement. And it's part of the Built for Shopify program, so you know it's easy to use. So say goodbye to high fees and hello to successful store-based crowdfunding. Start your free trial and transform your Shopify store into a pre-order powerhouse today. Search Crowdfunder in the Shopify App Store to get started.